And a very warm welcome to another edition of The More You Know. It's the podcast from Stanlib Asset Management. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and today is an interesting one. We're going to explore one of the most important building blocks of South Africa's long-term growth story, infrastructure investment. Now, we're not going to talk policy statements, but real projects, I hope. The ones that light homes, that move people, that digitize communities and support retirement funds that many, many people rely on. To help us understand how private equity and private credit each unlock different forms of critical impact, I'm joined by two people who are working right in the very center of it. Marissa Bester, Chief Operating Officer at Stanlib Infrastructure Investments, along with Johan Marnovic, Head of Fixed Income Private Markets at Stanlib. To both of you, a very warm welcome. Marissa, let's start at the very beginning. When you talk to clients, how do you define infrastructure investing today, particularly in this environment? Give us the broad definition.
So the official definition is infrastructure investing means allocating capital to projects or systems or companies which have real assets and provide essential services to the economy. What that means in practice is we have a range of different examples. These are quite typically energy generation projects, such as renewable energy, gas-fired power plants, all types of different power plants. There are transportation projects, such as rail projects, road projects, logistics, ports, digital infrastructure, and water. That would typically be your examples.
I'm going to talk to you in just a moment about the real state of infrastructure demand in just a second. But, Johan, to you, what's the biggest misconception that you hear from investors when they think about infrastructure opportunity?
Yeah, I think that it is, to an extent, not a commercial proposition, that it's only public assets that need to be provided by the fiscus and for free use to the general public, when in fact, broader commercial activity is facilitated by infrastructure assets. We almost can't function without functioning infrastructure.
Sure.
And if ever there's a society that have experienced this, it would have been South Africa, where there has been a lack of proper maintenance of public infrastructure. But the private sector, meaning commercial players, are very well positioned in the modern economy to provide critical infrastructure. And that's because of technological advancements, the way that society operates today, and our reliance on a broad spectrum of private infrastructure in the modern way of living that makes these assets private and commercial investable propositions.
No. All right, let's talk a little bit now about understanding demand, if we can. And Marissa, from your vantage point across all the active projects that you are involved in one way or another, how would you describe the real state of infrastructure demand right now? Maybe a simpler way of putting it is, should we be seeing lots of cranes on the horizon?
I do hope so. Mm. I think it's no secret that South Africa lags in terms of infrastructure spend. The last 30 years have seen underinvestment every single year, except for a very short period in the late 2000s before the World Cup. And the gap is estimated at 4 trillion rand. It's impossible to imagine that type of gap. So really, it means that it's not only private capital. It's all types of capital. We need capital from overseas. We need private capital. We need retirement capital. We need retail investors. We need every single source of capital that we can to fill this gap and to bring South Africa's economy back to where it should be.
And part of the problem is that we are lagging, and the more we lag, the more we will lag even further.
Correct. But there are some positive stories. We've seen in the last 10, 12 years how the power sector has transformed through private participation. So there was a government-led program which launched about 12 years ago, which facilitated private investment into the energy space. And it's been a global success story. And today we see hundreds of different projects around the country feeding into the grid where previously there was nothing.
Johan, from a capital markets perspective, what signals are you seeing that confirm where the country's most urgent funding gaps are right now?
Yeah, look, that's a broad question, Jeremy, but I'm going to bring it back into the infrastructure space, because the truth is that South Africa's got very thin capital markets that are very concentrated into a couple of, can I call them bankable players, right? I'm going to give you a quick example. So on our public markets, the Orbi, which is the most liquid part of our markets, really consists of 10 counterparty names, which are basically the public sector. And there's a couple of banks that participate there, right? If you look at developed markets, bond propositions, there's more than 1 million bonds listed in Western Europe, right? So we are tiny.
So that gives some real perspective, doesn't it? 100%.
Mm. So we are tiny and heavily concentrated into a few hands. That's the way this economy has developed over many years. The truth is, to get back to your question, that the need for capital flow and formation is extreme on this continent. And it's a human need at the end of the day. There's a deep human developmental need that will benefit from wider and richer capital markets in this country. South Africa has toyed with unnecessary ideologies over many years. We know the history of this country. But the time to embrace ideologies that are capital friendly for a human upliftment outcome is now, right?
Marissa, let's look at private equity versus private credit, and let's see how that creates some degree of impact. If we compare the two, what's the fundamental difference in how they create long-term developmental impact?
The two definitely work together. It is impossible to establish a project, these large-scale projects, and finance them and operate them without both credit and equity at the table. So we work extremely closely together. The key differences in terms of for investors are that equity have a more active mandate, so they have a seat at the table. You're a part owner of the project. So you have more influence. You have a seat at the table for 20 years or however long this project will run. So in terms of governance matters and day-to-day decisions, in terms of the impact and how the impact is spent, that is where equity comes in. Johan is the expert on the credit side, but you know, the way I see it is there are the guardrails and setting up frameworks and limits as to how things, maybe you can explain that better, Johan.
I can maybe step in there, but just to reiterate the point that the engine that is kind of private equity working together with private credit or debt is a very powerful capital deployment engine globally, right? It isn't that active and that powerful in South Africa simply because we don't have enough opportunities. We also don't have enough capital going around. But there's precedent kind of globally for how the two operate together. And that is right, that the equity piece is more actively involved in seeking out underlying opportunities and being part of the management and bringing those opportunities into cash flow generative fruition, right? Mm-hmm. If that's a way of putting it. Whereas debt provides leverage. It's a cheaper, less risky source of capital. In South Africa, of course, typically held by banks, but of late more and more into pension fund space, because the payoff in private credit is a more predictable one over time, and that is as a result of a bunch of security that the credit providers will take, certain covenants and guardrails that are embedded in loan agreements to protect credit providers, whereas equity, of course, looks a little bit different.
But you can't say that one has more influence over the other in terms of influencing the bankability of the project.
I would say that private credit, or I beg your pardon, equity is the kind of driving force whereas credit follows to an extent. But credit can direct the bankability, right? Mm-hmm. Let me give you a simple example. In a typical renewable energy transaction, the entire project may cost, I'm just going to put a number down, about 10 billion rand. Many, by the way, in the country are much more than that, 12, 15, 20 billion rand projects. This is the scale of renewable projects that have been rolled out into South Africa. Mm. Equity provides the underpin. It's the sponsor money, if I can put it that way. But the equity check is typically between 20 and 10% of the overall, right? Meaning without the credit check, the debt in that capital stack, it's not a viable project.
It would be too expensive.
So the equity guys are possibly more active, seeking out and bringing opportunities to the debt providers. But because debt providers are the majority of the capital stack, if we can't be convinced by our colleagues in the equity space that this is a viable project to bring kind of leverage in that needs to always obviously be sustained, I'm afraid there is no deal.
So how do you make the case then? How difficult is it to make the case? I sense you've had this conversation before.
No, I think that's where our expertise comes in. Yeah. If you've done this many times before, you know what to look out for. Mm. You know what the risks are and how to mitigate those as far as possible, of course, and how to package it correctly. Mm. For all stakeholders, not only for the debt, but, you know, you typically have other partners and stakeholders involved. So everybody needs to be considered.
Is there a common set of risks that you would apply in your thinking?
It depends on the type of infrastructure project. So I think we're all familiar with the vision of the renewable energy plant, these massive solar plants that you might see as you're driving through the Northern Cape or the Karoo, not that easy to spot from the road, but people more often see the wind farms. If you go on holiday, perhaps in the Eastern Cape, you will see these massive turbines and hundreds of them in a field.
Quite a spectacle, yeah.
Yes. So those are the typical infrastructure project that we like to point to, and we understand those risks well. Those projects sell energy under a long-term contract, so it removes certain risks. You don't have to go find a buyer if you're selling under the government program. It's changing a lot now with private participation. But market risk is no longer an issue. Price risk is not an issue. So the risks that remain are constructing the project well, operating it well, and making sure that the community are taken care of and that they're, you know, ongoing operating risks are taken care of. Where if you look at other types of infrastructure projects, let's look at a digital infrastructure company which provides fiber to the home. You know, there you will still be facing some type of market risk. It is still essential infrastructure, but you're not selling it to the government under a 20-year contract. So there are different types of risks.
Marissa, I've jotted down the word community here. Let's talk a little bit about unlocking social and environmental change, which is critical and germane to this entire issue. When you assess infrastructure from an operational lens, then, where does meaningful social and environmental change actually happen?
Let me give you an example. So if we construct a small, it's not small by any means, it's a 100 megawatt plant, for example, solar plant. Just imagine a tiny community in the Northern Cape. I'll give you one example, Olifantshoek in the Northern Cape. So we build a solar farm there, a 100 megawatt plant. There's nothing in that community. There are no other jobs. It's easy to measure impact in terms of jobs. These are not necessarily the projects that will generate as many jobs as you would find in other sectors. So that's not the only way to look at it. A real way to look at it is how many households have access to electricity from a project such as this. How many carbon emissions did we mitigate that was not actually put out into the air? And then where it becomes a bit more difficult to measure, but where it's really meaningful, is the long-term impact on the people living in that area, where this free resource is now being converted into impact for them.
And that measurement is critical. You can't just measure via jobs or megawatts delivered.
No, so it's got to be a lot more than that. In that community, there are typically there are at least 20 small, I would almost call them play groups. You know, there's in a shack, quite frankly, there is a lady with 10 children who she looks after every day. She has no training in that space. She has no food. She has no education materials. So these projects take care of those mamas, you would call them, and provide mentorship programs, lunch every single day for all the children, educational materials, training. This is a tiny amount of money. It's less than R1 million per project per year. But the impact on those children from age one, they are actually, you know, educated in a safe space. Quite often these facilities are being upgraded. You know, we're not building small, almost prefab type of structures for them. You know, they're getting good food. The long-term impact on them and on their families, because it enables the mother to go out and work, that's not something that's easy to measure, but those are true and real examples.
So, Johan, against the backdrop then of what you've both explained to me, am I being a little too enthusiastic when I say that infrastructure is now becoming or has become an asset class that retirement funds now cannot ignore?
I would fully agree with that statement, Jeremy. I think it is a very big capital formation theme in South Africa, but also globally. I do want to maybe, again, put a slightly different lens on it, which is the biggest global investment theme today is artificial intelligence. Mm. There are literally trillions of dollars going into that space elsewhere in the world, right? And by any other measure, that is infrastructure spend. It's obviously research and development, but that is infrastructure development on a grand, grand scale, right? And who provides that funding? It's public markets. Mm. And at the back of public markets are individuals and savings pools. And that is where pension funds are, right? That's just one kind of global example. South Africa is in a very different space. For pension funds, there is a risk and return payoff that is very interesting. Pension funds tend to sit with long-dated liabilities, and it's looking for long-dated asset returns that have a predictable and sound payoff profile. So there's a natural fit there. Secondly, for any pension fund trustee who lives in this country, wants to see the capacitation of the country and economy kind of longer term, right? So whilst you are considering infrastructure as an asset amongst many other propositions, firstly, it needs to stack up from a return perspective, right? We're not asking anybody here to retire poorer. But secondly, you want to retire in a place that is secure, where people are fed, where there's electricity and basic other resources. So there is that second order impact, which is why we use the term impact when it comes to some of these investments. That's a very important consideration for pension funds.
But Johan, Marissa spoke a little earlier about investments like this being very long dated. Difficult to balance that with shorter term liquidity requirements that pension 100%. Fund members need. How do you find that balance?
Yeah, so look, as fund managers, we are the recipient of funds from the pension fund industry by somebody who's advised them and has found that balance, right? So, but that doesn't mean, so we can obviously comment on that. So between ourselves and the pension fund industry sits a whole industry of advisors and fund allocators. And these are people who try and measure the immediate liquidity requirements of pension funds, life companies, and others who sit within this industry. So they would have worked out. And for that reason, we're not suggesting infrastructure or less liquid assets, private assets, where both of us are the only place to put your savings into. It's one of a broader basket, which is why often balanced funds or a balanced proposition or a diversified investment strategy is what pension funds and life companies are advised to deploy. But these assets clearly sitting in the less liquid, longer dated piece of that investment strategy. It's not the kind of stuff where you worry about it every day. Other investments cause you to worry every day. For as long as the sun shines, in some examples, for as long as railways are being used, in some examples, for as long as toll roads or harbors are being used, you click your coupon out. You make your money and your returns over time.
And there's often a misconception around how illiquid it is. It's not easy to sell your investment necessarily, although we have, for example, collaborated with pension fund investors to create an equity fund with some withdrawal mechanism. So it is possible. But it does self-liquidate over time. So if you put your 100 million rand in, you at least get at least CPI back every year. So the 5-6% every year. So that's a perfect match for a pension fund investor.
All right. We're coming to the end of the conversation. Final question to you both. And Marissa, looking ahead, where do you think the next wave of high impact infrastructure opportunity is going to be?
We all hope it's in the water space. It will require a lot of policy reform and
you said as it's raining outside while we're recording this, yes.
Yes. That's the question on everybody's lips is how are we going to fix the water infrastructure in this country? It's not an easy one, so we're hoping for some policy reforms and some ways for the private sector to participate meaningfully.
And Johan, maybe this is a good place to end it then. When global capital looks for sustainable opportunities, realistically, how competitive is South Africa as an infrastructure destination, either now or in the future?
Yeah, I'd say realistically, we're a small part of the options available to global fund allocators.
But there is opportunity.
There's definitely big opportunity. I mean, a lot of what we're talking about here is projects being funded by South Africans, right? So I used the example earlier. So definitely South Africans have the capacity to fund their own growth and capital formation. But secondly, South Africa is becoming more attractive. And we would have seen in the course of the last 3 months, the rand is much stronger against the dollar. There's stability. We've got a stable government, albeit possibly one still finding its way a little bit. And the rand being stronger and South Africa recently being upgraded means that we are and removed from a grey list means that we've gone from being a very small likely proposition and possibly even a pariah to stepping forward and becoming a more interesting proposition. And of course, importantly, South Africa as a gateway to Africa. I know it's long in the making and possibly even a cliche, but we're seeing big infrastructure investments in this country using it as a springboard into the rest. Yes. Data centers is a huge asset class. And South Africa, with our developed infrastructure, is being used to form and direct capital into a broader Africa proposition. So yes, we're small, but we're interesting and becoming more and more viable and interesting to global fund allocators.
To you both, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Now, whether through private equity or private credit, investors, I think, have powerful tools, as we've learnt, to unlock both impact and return. At Stanlib, the goal is to help investors choose the right instrument at the right moment in the project lifestyle, both with clarity and with purpose. So my thanks to Marissa Bester and Johan Manovic for their insights. This has been The More You Know from Stanlib. Until next time, goodbye to you and thank you for joining us. Stanlib Asset Management Pty Limited is an authorized financial services provider in terms of the FASE Act. This content should not be construed as advice.